Hi guys, welcome to Rewatchable episode 76, covering Avatar The Last Airbender, season 2, episodes 1, The Avatar State, and 2, The Cave of Two Lovers. As always, if you want to get in touch with us, our contact information is as follows. You can reach us via email at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com, on our Twitter, which is @RE_watchable, and also this post on hypable.com when it goes up. I'm Danya. I'm going to be hosting today, and everyone go around and say hi. I'm joined today by these guys.
I'm Karen.
I'm Mitch.
And I'm Brittany.
Yay!
And Mitch will be back momentarily as the show goes on, because my cat nicked my finger pretty bad. That's just what happens when you play with your cat during podcasting.
Mitchell.
Didn't that way I won't feel
bad. This happened last as well.
Yeah, this always happens. I don't know. The cats like to like sit around when I'm podcasting to like play with me, and yeah, it never ends well. But this way I won't be around to be embarrassed by my recaps being read out loud. Cool. So good on
you
that.
You go and sort that out, and I'll get on with reading out the synopsis for episode 1 of season 2, the Avatar State. So our synopsis is, after the events of the finale at the Northern Water Tribe, the gang travels on a ship with Master Paku. Paku tells Aang to train under Bumi for earthbending at the Earth Kingdom city of Amashu. The waterbending master parts company with the gang by handing Aang waterbending scrolls and Katara's sacred healing water. The gang arrives at an Earth Kingdom military base where the general is meant to be their guide into Amashu. However, the general wants to make plans to use Aang in the Avatar State as an ultimate weapon against the Fire Lord immediately. When Aang refuses to try and trigger the Avatar State, the general's guards attack Aang and Katara is put into mortal danger. A pissed off Aang wreaks havoc on the Earthbenders and the gang leaves for Amashu on their own. Meanwhile, Zuko and Iroh are attempting to lie low when Zuko's sister, Princess Azula, arrives on the scene. She nearly tricks the two refugees into coming onto her ship as prisoners until a guard lets out Azula's plan. Zuko and Iroh escape Azula's evil clutches and cut off their hair near a river. Dun, dun, dun.
Okay, so I have a question right off the top.
Okay.
Is she the woman that I missed in the crowd?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
yes, she is. What did you think of that reveal, by the way, at the end of season one? About Zuko's sister and then having her right at the end to be like, Zuko sucks and Iroh's a traitor, and then you're going to have to do everything.
I kind of liked it. Like, I kind of like her. I like to hate her. And she just seems really, I don't know, confident and strong. And I think that she's going to make a good adversary.
Yay! Good, because I really like Azula, but also in a love-to-hate-her kind of way. Like, I have so many feelings about her. So, yes. So Katara now has sacred healing water. Yeah. That's going to be interesting. What do you think she might use that for?
Healing.
Well, like, do you think there's going to be anything specific? Or if she's going to, like, do you think she'll use it very sparingly because she's got such a small amount of it?
Yes.
Yeah?
I have no idea.
No inclination, like, of what she might do with it. Like, I mean, obviously the healing part of it, but...
Well, that was perfect timing.
She's like, clearly going to use it on Zuko. Guys, come on.
Do you think so? I was thinking
Absolutely.
Maybe Aang will get really hurt and she has to save his life.
No, I think she's going to use it on Zuko.
I like that theory better.
See, this is what I wanted.
That's what
I was just
finding it out for
smart.
Like what they think. Yeah, well...
I'm going to be devil's advocate and say, why is no one giving Sokka any love? Is he just going to die next time he's a mortal injury and Katara's
actually,
not going to heal?
Actually, he was the first one I thought of, but I was like, story-wise, it would be more significant if it was used on Aang to save his life. But Sokka was the first one that I thought of.
I mean, yeah, he's the Avatar after all, so I can see that logic.
Is this your comment, Mitch, about Paku?
Oh, yeah. I really think that Paku's just going back because he wants to go and get with Gran-Gran again. That's like his whole thing. And I mean, dude, give up. It's been like 70 years. It's not going to happen.
Gran-Gran's been pretty lonely out there, so, you know, maybe.
Gran-Gran's
single.
She's
not that into you. You need the book.
Oh my gosh, you guys. I was angry messaging Danya while I was watching that episode with him and how he was being such a jerk and not wanting to train Katara because she was a girl. I was so mad.
She was really mad. Like, I can't even remember what I was doing, but like every 2 seconds I was just getting a message from Karen. Just like, I don't like this guy, he's really mean. Which is what Karen does. She just goes, no, he's really mean.
Thanks. Moving on.
Moving on to the most exciting part for me personally.
Oh, I thought about
we're
you
going
this.
To Amashu.
Oh my gosh, as soon as they said Boomy, I was like, Brittany is gonna be so excited.
But obviously,
that was your prediction, wasn't it? You predicted that.
Well, I think we were
there.
Asking like who we wanted to see again, and I was like, Boomy, hands down. I need to see Boomy again. And here we are. We're going to Amashu.
Which is just funny to me because it seems so like left field. But I'm glad that you thought of that because I guess is it something about like how he's the only friend still alive of Aang?
Yeah, and I have more thoughts that I'll revisit when we get to the next episode. That I angrily expressed in our group. Because I'm finally, I can't be on next week, so I can watch more than 2 episodes a week, and I'm very excited.
It's a catch-22, isn't it, when you're not on?
It is, because I was like, all right, I'll watch these 2 episodes, but then this episode ended, and I can't watch the next one until we're done recording.
Watch them immediately after we finish recording, if you want.
I know, I have some time. So,
and Brittany and Karen, I have to ask you guys something that I brought up a lot in this show. Do you guys cry watching this show in the finale fights of every episode?
I don't think I'm that emotionally attached yet. I have a lot of feelings, but I'm not. Yeah. I think if once I finish and I go back and rewatch, I'm going to have a lot more feelings.
I get a little emotional. I don't think I've actually cried. Might have teared up before. I get goosebumps during the fights a lot because they just look so amazing.
Yeah, it's kind of like a goosebump cry, I suppose. If not like a I'm so sad cry, if that makes sense. So I don't know, Brittany, how you're going to handle watching like 4 in a row because that's just going to make you an emotional wreck for the day.
Can't wait.
See, I'm just imagining Mitch sat in like his computer chair, just like with all of these goosebumps on his arms, and just like sitting there going, "Oh my god, this is so emotional."
I really do. Like the Katara Zuko fight is just too much for me. I cannot handle it. He's like, "Hey, little girl." I'm like, "Ah!"
Oh my god, Mitch!
Is there Wi-Fi on this bison?
Oh, you're my favorite fail avatar, Mitch.
Poor Karen's left out. We were talking about how I would be like the worst avatar ever because I would just be like, you know, asking for the luxuries of the real world when I'd be stuck in like a flying air bison all day. Like, it's all cold up there.
Because I was very confused, but I don't want to say anything in case I was supposed to get what you guys are talking about. So thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah.
One of those moments, yeah. It's like when you're
I'm just nodding and smiling.
Yeah,
it's like
totally.
They're going, wow, the signal up here is terrible, guys.
Oh, jeez.
But yes, so obviously we meet that Earth Kingdom general who tries to trigger the Avatar State in Aang to go immediately and fight the Fire Lord. Good plan or bad plan?
Bad plan. I got so mad, almost as mad as I got at Paku, but not quite. But he was just, I just wanted to punch him in the face.
I mean, at least I guess you can kind of with Paku kind of go like that's how the Northern Water Tribe is set up in terms of like that very narrow view of their culture. Like how their roles are very, very specific. And he's always lived that way. And it takes like strong women to change Paku's mind. And it is changed by the end of season one. And you see it carrying into this season as well. But this guy is just straight up crazy. There's no changing this guy's mind.
Does he fit in the book of crazy cakes?
He does fit in the book of crazy cakes, I think.
He's messing with something that he does not understand, and he should know how powerful the Avatar is and why he kept pushing Aang. I will never understand.
Mm. Well, you know what? It's funny because I think for once I was actually successful in making my discussion point a little bit ambiguous as to what I thought, because this time around I actually thought it was smart, but he wasn't doing it in the right way. I thought that he should have done this, and I do agree that this is like a good way to, like, I don't know, like neatly tie off the series, like perhaps don't put Katara in mortal danger, but maybe just like send Aang against Ozai right now, and he'll just be so scared immediately that he'll just go into the Avatar state and just slash him in half with like his giant water titan spirit again or something. Like after the finale where I was Donya mentioning that it was, you know, kind of like not like a Deus Ex Machina, but it was just too convenient for him to be able to transform like that, when it was just like, why didn't you do that before? So now I'm just like, why don't you just do that now? Go to the spirit world, ask them for help. And you know, get Yue this time around. She's a pretty good friend by now. Get her to turn you into like a giant moon titan or something, and then game over, done. Ozai's out. I don't know. It seems really convenient for me that they're not doing that.
But yeah, then he can't really control it. Can he? It's like it's like raw power. It's not something that he has, and we see it here. It is not something he has specific control over. He has to either be in, like, he either has to have someone else be in very specific mortal and immediate danger, or he needs to be threatened or emotionally compromised in some way, which, you know, in those instances, he's never going to be fully in control of that power. And then you start wondering if he does have all of that power in hand, and he turns that far and he has all of that raw power, what's to say it's not just going to turn on everyone?
Plus, have we not learned anything from Aang trying to do firebending before it was time to do that? I mean, he has to do everything in order, master all of the elements, and then I think he'll have better control over his Avatar state.
Yeah, plus this was a good way to revisit the spirit world and, like, learn what's actually happening when he's in this state. Like, it's all the past Avatars coming together. So it worked in that element, but I think it was, like Mitch is saying, it's too convenient for him to just be able to access it and go kill Ozai and live happily ever after.
It would be way too convenient for that to happen.
Beautiful little Aang Katara babies.
Ugh.
If only.
Ugh.
You're gonna have fun next episode, Danya.
God, don't. This was the episode where we found out that if you're killed in the Avatar state, then it ends the Avatar cycle, right?
Yes.
Yes. What really did you think scary. About that twist?
Yeah, that is terrifying.
I mean, I'm glad they said that, though, because that puts... I mean, we knew that the Avatar state was a big deal, but, like, I like the idea that he's super, super powerful, and yet he's also super, super vulnerable. Like, that just juxtaposition of the power is really interesting.
I love the juxtaposition of that as well. Like, I think it's such a clever idea that at the point where he's most powerful, he's also at his weakest, which I just think is just a fantastic idea, because it just means that he's not undefeatable in that state. There is something that, you know, he can genuinely be frightened about. So if he was, for example, to go after Ozai in the Avatar state at a point where he can't control it, there is a very real danger that it could just completely end the Avatar cycle. And then, yeah, I think him. So that just reinforces for me the fact of how bad a plan it is to put him in the Avatar state at this point and go after Ozai.
You guys do raise really good points. And Karen, kind of off of where Donya's coming from, I have a question specifically for you, because I am just reading through the Maze Runner series and deeply enjoying them. But I am very frustrated, as Thomas is in that series, and when he doesn't learn things when he should have, or when people kind of just hide things from him for the convenience of the story. And that's where I feel like this, if you die in the Avatar state, you're dead for everything came, because there are a couple things every once in a while that just like aren't taught to him by the spirits, by like Avatar Roku or anyone that knows, even Iroh, I suppose, that should have been taught to him before. So, it's a kind of a two-pronged question. Does that bother you in other series like The Maze Runner? And did you even notice it in the series?
Those are really good questions, because one of the tropes I hate most is that one where people misunderstand something, and then that's where the plot and the conflict comes from, or somebody doesn't tell somebody something important, or they lie, and all the conflict stems from that, because that's a really convenient way to cause conflict, and there are a lot more interesting ways that you can have two people butt heads instead of having them misunderstand or lie to each other. So, yeah, that bothers me a lot. Strangely enough, I didn't really pick up on it in Avatar, because I feel like he hasn't gone into the Avatar state that often, and when he does learn certain lessons, and this just happened to be when this one kind of came up. And I think that his whole journey is about discovering the truth himself and doing it in a certain way, in a certain order. And so I think it kind of made sense that it happened to come up at this point that he would be that vulnerable in the Avatar state.
I agree with that as well. Like, it wasn't particular, like the last couple of times he's been in the spirit world, it's been for other very specific reasons that took precedent at that time. This was a point where he needed to learn a little bit more about what the Avatar state actually means. So it coming up at this point felt very natural rather than very convenient for the plot in order to move it on.
Right.
So,
it's funny too, because now that you open up my mind to that, Karen, that's a, I suppose we could say, cheap way of bringing up conflict. Harry Potter, the whole series is based off of the fact that Harry doesn't know what he doesn't know. So like, all of that. So it's funny to me that we all seem to like the show, the series so much. But you guys do bring up a good point that it wasn't up until then that he really needed to know. Although I have one last quip with this. You would think that after hundreds of Avatars, there would be just like a general book, even etched in stone, whatever, like how to be the Avatar. Done.
12-step process.
Could you imagine if that fell into the hands of someone else? Ooh. They would have basically everything they would need to destroy the Avatar in that book.
Because but is it even sacred information? Because it really does feel like everyone else knows what Aang doesn't already.
Or at least people who have had some kind of direct connection with an Avatar in their line.
But, so like, only if you're in the posse? Like, if you're Katara and Sokka, you can know what's going on. But if you're like Zuko and Ozai.
But then, for example, people who are higher up in, like, their specific societies. So, like, for example, the Earth King and people directly related to the Earth King probably would know more about the Avatar, because we know that the relationship between the Avatar and people of their, like, people of the highest status in each kingdom have a really good relationship. So them knowing more about the Avatar, you'd imagine that would be passed down through, like, the royal families or the hierarchy of, like, however those places are controlled.
And now I'm just imagining, like, I wonder why this didn't happen in, like, for instance, the Harry Potter series, why someone doesn't try and make friends with the protagonist just to, like, find out more about them, to, like, assassinate them, you know, and kind of be, like, a backstabber, because if I was an evil guy, I wouldn't be like Ozai and Zuko. I would just, like, secretly try and be friends with him. I would be like Sokka this whole time, and then plot twist, I'm the one trying to kill the Avatar, you know, like that'd be a little bit smarter than what they're doing right now.
And Aang is so naive and so innocent and trusting that plan would really work.
Mm-hmm.
But it's would. Not Sokka. It can't be Sokka.
I mean, I love 10 years old. He's literally 10 years old. So it's so easy to just go in and just, like, find out all you can from him. And he would just be like, okay, cool, new friend. And that's it. Because think about how many new people he meets every episode. That he's just like, I'm the Avatar. Here we go. And he doesn't even give it a second thought.
Right. Moving on to Princess Azula. What were your first impressions of her?
Whoever wrote this in the doc pretty much nailed it. She's a BAMF.
I really like her. I mean, I don't, it's like we were saying earlier, she's one of those people you love to hate. Whereas like Katara, you're meant to love, but with her, you can love to hate her.
Now, Karen, you caught that focus too, didn't you? On the focus shot of her during the Ozai Zuko fight flashback.
No, that was what I missed. And you guys were talking about, who do you think she is? And I'm like, I'm totally lost. So I'm glad that that's now that can stop bugging me because I don't know who I missed, but now I know it was her.
Did you go back and watch it?
No, because it was too hard to find it. Also, I'm lazy.
Karen couldn't be bothered. Oh. I'm so happy to hear that the newbies have such a good impression of Azula, aren't you, Danya?
Yeah, we were talking about this a little bit when we went through, just after the synopsis bit, though, where we were saying that, like, I'm the same, is that I love Azula. I hate her, but I love her so much. And that's what you want from a villain. You want to, like them for being a villain.
She kind of reminds me of Ursula. Like, I love-hate Ursula in the same way.
Ursula's a really, really good villain.
Yeah. They have, like, a humor to them, and they have, like, this kind of, like, sexy illustriousness to them, and it's all about, like, their delivery, you know? And they just kind of make you laugh, even when you know you shouldn't. Oh, love
she's so cool and confident, and she just knows she's the best, and it's kind of refreshing to see that, especially in a female character.
Yes.
Confidence is key, really, with the villain, I think.
Yeah. I mean, were you fooled, like, when she was lying to Zuko and Iroh about Zuko being able to return to the Fire Nation?
No, did you at all?
You didn't buy it?
No way.
Oh, really? I thought the lie, watching it again, the lie that she does in the house, like, father wants you back, I'm sorry. It almost convinced me, okay?
How? After that whole thing, like, the next thing here is, like, do the tides command the ship? After that attitude, do you really think that she's just going to be like, oh, come here, bro, it's okay?
I mean, what can
she
I say?
She knows that Zuko will buy that.
Grey Delisle, the voice actress for her, is a pretty famous voice actress for, like, cartoons and the like. And she just does such a good job of getting the nuances of Azula's voice that I believe everything she says. There's never a time when she's doing, like, these lies, which she's kind of, like, that's part of her personality, you know? She just tends to want to, like, sneak around and trick people into doing something. And I always believe them. It's weird. And I shouldn't, because I know the outcomes. I don't know why I do, but I suppose I explained it right there. It's the voice actress that I like so much.
But yes, obviously this ultimately leads to Zuko and Iroh becoming fugitives and kind of... Well, I'd say it's like a disguise, but it's not really a disguise. They cut off their hair, which...
That's like a symbolism thing.
Yes,
like...
it is.
Okay.
Head of the nail, Brittany.
Here's the thing about this, because I knew this was a huge deal. Like, I gasped and I was like, oh no, but I don't know why. Are we supposed to know why at this point?
Now, it depends on which culture they're drawing from specifically, but it's basically... the hair in Chinese cultures, for example, and have you seen Mulan as well?
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought of.
So it's basically the length of your hair is it's bound by like honor and kind of that sort of thing, and it means certain things, like certain ways you tie it up and certain lengths and that sort of thing. Cutting it off completely means that you're cutting ties with everything it's linked to. So, yeah, it's kind of like cutting their ties with the royal family, because certain styles would be like indicative of being royalty and that sort of stuff. So it's essentially their way of saying that then they're no longer part of the Fire Nation, I guess.
Plus now Zuko has like that really bad like first day of school after summer break buzz cut that like all first graders show up with.
It was so shocking. Like, he looked so different.
He does.
Yeah. But I just want to bring up the reason, part of the reason why I knew that it was significant was, if you guys have ever seen Shanghai Noon,
yes.
That was what it reminded me of, with Jackie Chan's like long braid, and like that's really important to him. And I was like, oh no, this means something.
And it's like, do you guys watch Game of Thrones? Who watches Game of Thrones out of you guys?
Yes. Well, I'm in the middle of season 3 right now.
Well, I was going to say, as long as you've seen season 1 or read the first book.
I don't do either. I don't plan to, so it won't bother me.
Okay. Mitch?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I know enough about the series to get your reference, though.
Okay, so it's basically like the Dothraki and their long hair. And
oh, yeah.
Basically, it signifies that, like, the longer the hair, the more, it's like the stronger the warrior kind of thing. And if it's cut off, it means you're disgraced.
Oh, Dragon Ball Z, I can't. That really is the whole series of Dragon Ball Z.
Mitch has, like, a lot of feelings about Dragon Ball Z that keep, like, creeping into this podcast, and I love it.
Oh, yeah. It's funny, because, like, I didn't really get into that show so much. It was, like, the first kind of Avatar-like show that I was able to watch. But I wasn't able to, though, because I had to sneak in the basement and, like, watch it on an old TV. My mom and dad didn't even know it was hooking up to cable anymore. And it was, like, an after-school big deal for me to watch that. And, like, the fact that I think Avatar was on Nickelodeon was the only reason I was able to watch it. I couldn't even watch Pokemon growing up until I was, like, 13. Like, yeah, that's how sheltered I was.
Wow.
Dragon Ball Z, because it was on, like, we used to go to my aunt's house in the summer, and it was always on the kitchen TV during, like, lunch. So we'd be just sitting there eating chicken nuggets, and as soon as Little Bear would end for my little cousins to watch, we'd flip over and watch Dragon Ball Z.
And the thing is, like, Dragon Ball Z, this is so non sequitur, so I won't go into it, has, like, 6 episodes in one. Because they show, like, the previously on, and that shows every single, like, important scene. Then they have the episode that's happening, and then they show the one that's coming up, which spoils everything of the next episode. So it was really a really weird show. But, like, yeah, they're all about, like, going Super Saiyan and going a new level, and their hair's longer, they're more powerful and stuff. So I don't know how I couldn't make that comparison.
Yeah. I mean, it works. It does work. You see this kind of theme through a lot of shows that either are, like, Asian inspired or actually have been translated from an Asian show. So, yeah. Right, let's move on to favorite scenes, and we'll start with Mitch. Mitch, what was your favorite scene?
Well, it's funny too, because now that we're talking, I came up with another one. But the firsthand one is when Aang is just in the Avatar state, demolishing all those guards, and I was like, yeah, they deserved that. But my newest one that I just came up with was the fact that Zuko's hair bending finally came into existence, because he just has, like, no hair up until his little ponytail in the back, and then all of a sudden he has, like, a buzz cut, like Karen said, up until, like, the front of his forehead, and it just doesn't make any sense. I can't get over that hair bending.
I figured he just shaved his head every day.
Yeah, that's an extensive process, you know? I don't know if I'd really
didn't have much else going on that ship, so.
And hair apparently is very important, so I think he would take the time to shave it every day.
I'm just going to assume that there was a time gap between chapter 1 and chapter 2 of season 2, so that part that he usually would have shaved started to grow enough.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
There was a bit of a time jump, so either that or his hair grows really damn fast.
Honestly, I was just happy that he wasn't going to be walking around with a mostly bald head and that little patch of longer hair in the back. I was really excited to see the buzz cut, to tell you the truth.
Okay, he is sexier with his buzz cut, I'll give you that much.
It's true.
It's kind of like Kristen Bell's hair in Veronica Mars when she finally starts, like, styling it and it grows out a bit. It just looks a little bit sexier, and you like her a little bit more. That's how I feel about Zuko.
Oh, dear. Karen, what was your favorite scene?
Mine was when Aang was all hopped up on his tea, because that's how I get when I drink a lot of tea, kind of like I am now. And so I could just really relate to it.
Okay. It was really, really funny.
Yeah.
I love
Karen,
that
do you feel? I feel like you'd be like a Lorelai Gilmore, as we're all probably watching that show on Netflix now, but like, you guys seem like you have a lot of similarities, especially with your addiction to caffeine.
Yeah, I don't like coffee. I hate coffee, but I drink a lot of tea.
We should do those same teas that you do for Not Another Teen Wolf podcast for, like, Atla. We should come up with flavors for every character and order them.
They have some, I think.
Pretty sure they do.
Yeah?
Someone does a set of Avatar teas, I'm pretty sure.
I might have to try that now that I've watched the show.
Yeah, I'll see if I can dig out the link and I'll send it to you guys. And maybe we could potentially, if I find it in the show notes, we could maybe link to it.
Yeah.
So that other people know what we're talking about as well. If you've never heard of Adagio teas, they make people can make tea blends based on characters and shows, and they make it for ships as well in certain instances, or sometimes they'll have two individual teas and you'll get deals on them if the people who made the teas ship them, because they'll say this tea is in a ship, so you get 10% off if you buy both of them together. It's really, really cool. So if I find the Avatar set of Adagio teas, we can link to it in the show notes so you guys can see what's up with that.
Oh, yeah, and we could probably have you tweet it out too, Britt, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
The Hogwarts Christmas blend is so good.
I drink so many of the Teen Wolf ones. So many.
I want to try them. That's really cool. I wonder if they have one for this tea that Aang drank.
We'll have a look and see.
That'd be interesting. It'd be funny because, I mean, there's actually another tea that comes up in the next episode too. Isn't it
Yeah, but I wouldn't want to drink that tea.
Yeah, no.
Because it gives you a big giant rash.
Yeah. Let's not drink that tea. Brittany, what was your favorite scene?
When they're trying to get Aang into the Avatar state and they give him like a symbolic piece of clothing or an article from all the tribes, and then they just mix all the elements together and like throw mud on him.
It's just when the mud hits
him. Just mud.
Yeah. It's fantastic. And obviously we've gone over it, but my favorite scene was when Iroh and Zuko ceremonially cut off their hair and kind of sabotage the Fire Nation. So yes, we'll move on to favorite lines. So Mitch, what was your favorite line?
Well, first off, apologies for stealing yours. I did not read your favorite scene, so my bad. I guess it was just that excellent. But my favorite line is Azula talking to that man on the ship, and she has a golden line where she says, "Well then, maybe you should worry less about the tides, who've already made up their mind about killing you, and worry more about me, who's still mulling it over."
So good.
Oh my gosh.
So good.
That writing is just, it kills me. I love it.
Karen, what was your favorite line?
Mine's from Sokka, who I'm quickly becoming obsessed with, apparently. And he says, "Glow it up and stop the Fire Lord." And I just thought that was the funniest way to refer to the Avatar state.
Glow it up. Brittany, what was yours?
Oh, mine was when Master Paku's sending them all off and he says, "Fly straight to the Earth Kingdom base to the east of here. General Fong will provide you with an escort to Omashu. There you'll be safe to begin your earthbending training with King Bumi."
As soon as he said his name, I thought of you and I was like, oh my god, King Bumi.
Yeah. I'm really glad I have this reputation.
If this show was airing right now, I'd say that the Atla creators are listening to Rewatchable.
And mine was also an Azula line, which is when she said, "In my country, we exchange a pleasant hello before asking questions. Have you become uncivilized so soon, Zuzu?" I just love the nickname Zuzu for Zuzu.
Oh, I know. It sounds like a little, it's like a Zuzu pet.
Yeah.
Those little hamster things.
Oh, God.
Oh, that's funny. I didn't make that connection until you said it out loud. That's hilarious.
Right, let's move on to chapter 2, The Cave of Two Lovers, which I've been eagerly anticipating this episode so bad. So bad. I love this episode so much. It's ridiculous.
Danya, I sense hints of sarcasm in your voice.
No. I actually genuinely love this episode so much.
I'm pretty sure this has been my least favorite episode.
No, I loved it. I was laughing so hard the entire time.
Right?
Oh, I was so annoyed. So
We know why you don't like this episode really.
Well, no, it's not just the ending. It's just, it was the whole thing.
Oh, no, I absolutely adore this episode so much. But let's get into the synopsis for it. So, while the gang is hanging out in a river, they meet singing hippie vagabonds. The leader tries to convince the gang to take the underground labyrinth to Amashu as opposed to flying over the pass. Only after the gang is viciously attacked by Fire Nation soldiers do they agree. Unfortunately, the soldiers track the gang and trap them in the ominous cave system. Eventually, Aang, Katara, and Appa are separated from the rest, while Sokka and Ko are attacked by wolf bats and giant earthbending moles. Katara and Aang discover the tomb of the two lovers. Katara reads the origin story of Amashu from their graves. Katara and Aang figure out that the only way to get out of the cave is to smooch and then follow the glowing crystals. Outside, they meet Sokka and Ko, who played music to Fluffy to ride the mole beasts. The gang parts ways with the hippies and arrives at a Fire Nation-occupied Amashu. Iroh and Zuko eat dinner at a Foxy nurse's house and then eat and run via a stolen bird horse. I thought it was ostrich kind of thing.
I don't know. Well, I was going off of how when Sokka wanted to get on it in the last episode, he called it a bird horse. So I was like, is that canon now? Or...
Yes, it looks kind of vaguely ostrichy-ish to me. But we also missed the opportunity to say everything changed when the Fire Nation attacked in the synopsis, Mitch.
Let us down, Mitch. Ariana is so disappointed.
Yes, yes, she is.
I have big shoes to fill when Ariana is not reading the recaps, to tell you the truth. Because she's like...
put it in there.
Oh, it's like 12 times. Actually, yeah, she would have, because it would have been like the Fire Nation attacked them over the pass, and then the Fire Nation attacked Amashu. And the Fire Nation trapped them in there? Okay, I'll stop.
Yeah. So, songs. Oh my god. How much did you guys love the songs?
I kind of hated the hippies, I'm not going to lie.
Me too, they're so annoying.
Oh no, they were fun.
I love them so much.
Yeah, it's funny that the newbies are so separated from the super fans right now, but
I mean, the songs were funny, like I did laugh, but it was when they weren't singing that I was just over it. I was hoping that they just put them in the cave and left.
Oh, wow.
I was like, they're going with them. They're going with them.
But it's so funny to see them playing off Sokka and Sokka just being like so done with them, like 200% done with them all the time. I love that.
I felt like Sokka that whole time.
Yes, I closely relate with Sokka.
I love the songs, though. Like, I still will find myself sometimes, I'll, like, be washing dishes, and I'll start singing Secret Tunnel. Like, not lying. It gets stuck in my head randomly, because I love it that much.
We need to get these MP3s for you, stat.
Oh, that would be so cool.
Get to it, rewatchable listeners. Make Danya's day.
Yeah, make my day. I want to listen to it on repeat.
Oh, God, that's funny. I never thought that they were, like, that good, but I like them.
It's specifically the Secret Tunnel bit. It's just Secret Tunnel.
You're adorable, Danya. I can't get enough of you.
No, don't say stuff like that. No, we're moving on.
Don't blush!
No, I'm not blushing. I'm not.
I mean, I like them because they were kind of just like coming in just for the ride. They're just like, okay, Avatar, whatever. Let's call them Arrowhead. Just go along for the ride. Why not? This looks kind of fun. And they don't even feel like they're in peril. They're just they're kind of like just trusting in the cave to get them out. It's just
trust
great.
And love, man.
I mean, they were like stoned. Let's be real. They were beyond high.
This episode yeah, they were only drinking had the subtlety of Shaggy and Scooby Doo of being complete potheads. I'll give them that.
Who put down that Appa looked cute with his flower braids? Because true, and
yeah,
also
he did.
Yeah, I did that.
He's so cute.
I didn't know he had that much hair. Like that long hair, I suppose.
Anything's possible in animation.
Hair bending
is hair bending.
So we got a different style of animation in this episode as well during the Yomashu origin story. What did you guys think of the change of pace with that little bit of animation?
I always like when they do it. Like, I mean, always, meaning the two times that they've done it. But I
yeah, I was thinking back, I was like, Brittany, I think they've only ever done it in that horrible episode.
Well, so far, they're 2 for 2.
I liked this one a lot better than I liked the last one.
I think it's nice. I like when they use, like, it's very, very inspired by paintings of the time. So, like, really, really old kind of Chinese and Japanese paintings depicting, like, scenes and history stuff. So I thought it was really, really interesting to use, like, the style specifically to kind of tell the Omashu origin story. I absolutely love it, and it, like, put me in mind of, like, how they used the animation for the Tale of Three Brothers in Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah.
So it kind of put me in mind of that. And I love when they kind of use a different style to highlight, like, a really important, like, thing. So, like, the origin story.
Danya, this reminds me also of the video game series Okami, which I'm sure you're familiar with by now.
Yeah.
You have a paintbrush as your weapon, and it's very... It's not, like, cel-shaded, it's, like, painted, like, this whole episode. It's a really unique video game, so if anyone was a big fan of, like, that art style specifically, there is a niche for you in this world, and a lot of people fit into it.
Yeah. Were you kind of interested to learn where earthbending originally came from, like the giant moles?
Yeah.
That's weird.
I wasn't expecting that.
But then you think that the kind of style that earthbending is, it's like very, very close to nature kind of thing. So it kind of makes sense that they learned it from someone who's basically lives in the earth. So
this is kind of splitting hairs, but I was more interested in learning about the first two earthbenders, like human earthbenders, than I was about the giant mole things. I thought it was really cool that the two lovers were the first two earthbenders ever.
Yeah, I love that as well. Like, I love the origin story of Amaki.
Oh, Karen, make the connection. The labyrinth changes every night.
Yeah.
Oh, did you think of this too when you were watching it?
Kinda, yeah.
Oh, God, that's funny. There's, like, way too much Maze Runner stuff going on in these two episodes of Atla. It's weird how, like, when I'm watching a show or in a book or series, that, like, I swear I see direct parallels to what they are.
I am getting so antsy about the fact that the Maze Runner still has not come out in the UK yet. We've got books, but the movie still doesn't come out here for another 5 days. I am genuinely going to be in the United States of America to see it before it comes out in the UK.
You will not be disappointed.
Yes, I am. I'm going to be reunited with Karen. It's all very, very exciting.
Oh, you are going to have the best time of your life watching that movie with Karen specifically, because she's going to, like... I read your article about, like, the changes of the book and stuff.
Oh, my God.
It was great, because you're right. It was just so much better.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to it. I've tried to avoid as many kind of spoilers of how it's changed from the book, but I didn't succeed, because there were so many articles to edit.
Well, you're welcome.
Yeah, I'm sure. But, I mean, I can say this much. I'm concerned for the future of the series. because I don't know how they're going to get around some flaw points. But this is not Maze Runner podcast. Sorry about that. I just had to. It was just, we're talking about changing labyrinths, guys. That's the story of Maze Runner.
I would also like to point out that Danya and I are going to be seeing Brittany soon as well. So, Mitch, you are on the outskirts here.
Yeah, you are.
I know, but I saw you saying that you're looking to move to Colorado, and I was like, that's where I am right now. I should totally come hanging out in Denver for a bit and see what it's like. It's a beautiful city. I can imagine us having secret passes in our mountains, too, with like cicada two lovers.
Oh, why did that sound really dirty? Wow.
It did. I kind of said it with a little bit of sexiness in there, but that's okay.
I'll match.
As long as you don't have wolf bats, because I was genuinely scared of them.
No, but we do have giant freaking white praying mantises.
No thanks.
Yeah, that thing just, I can't get that out of my head. It was definitely, like, rearing after me as I was just walking on my path to school out of a bush. It's, like, giant thing just, like, hissing at me. It was like the wolf bats, actually, because it was just that terrifying. I didn't know what to do. I swear its little, like, pincer was coming up. Like, it wanted to, like, slice at me. And I was like, what do you think you're going to do to me? I'm just so much bigger. Just leave me alone.
Hey. Just imagine Mitch the Avatar. No, go away. Yeah.
Tired today. Too many carbs. God.
Do you want to just go and watch Netflix?
Like best friends with the white, shiny, prying mantis. Yeah, that sounds good.
Or just be like, guys, I can't earthbend this mountain today. There's a ski lift right over here. Let's just take it up.
Cave of Two Lovers, come on, guys. I'm literally just going to, like, use my firebending and light the way the whole time. It's not going to be a big deal.
No, you'll just send up a flare and be like, meet me here.
Goblet of Fire style. No, really, why didn't Aang use his firebending? I know he doesn't like to use it, but they were going to die in that tunnel sans fire. Was he planning on doing it after it went out or something? Because he just was just
but I don't not think even talking he really, about that. He doesn't have control over firebending yet. So maybe he was a little afraid to use it.
Yeah, he would have set Katara on fire instead of, like,
Oh, that'd be a good use for the sacred water then, huh?
Oh, my gosh. Instead of, like, smooching on her and then...
Okay, so gross.
They didn't kiss, did they?
No.
No.
I hope not.
Wait.
Okay.
I would like to hope it didn't actually get that far.
It is definitely left up to interpretation, because the lights fade out mm-hmm. when they're, like, a centimeter away from each other.
I'm going to say no. I'm going with no.
I'm going to say no, too.
Nope.
Oh, I'm the only one that thinks that they kissed? That was always, like, a big deal to me watching the show. It was like, that's the first Katang kiss.
Oh, no. Katang does not sail. It crashes and burns.
Oh, my God. No one likes Katang? No one on this podcast?
Ugh, no.
Nope.
I mean... I don't hate it. I like Zutara a lot more.
I was about to say, everyone likes Zutara instead. I could tell.
I like Zutara a lot more.
Well, the thing is like, Zutara is so foreign to me because it's nothing I knew and nothing I saw in the subtext when I first rewatched it. But now rewatching it, it's really like, it's so blatantly there.
I feel like it was like implanted in me from the... first episode of Rewatchable.
it's like Love and Veronica Mars all over again, Karen. This is horrible. We've never escaped.
Yeah,
none of us ships like that couple that was kind of like Zutara in Veronica Mars show of Rewatchable up until like the super fans were like, you have to ship this, and then we did.
I actually saw Zutara right from the beginning, and I feel like every interaction they have, no matter how minuscule, is like super significant. And when they were fighting each other, I was like, oh my god, it was real.
I had a lot of feelings I didn't think I was supposed to, but it was there.
it is like super epic when they get together, because when I see those two characters on screen together, it does send chills up my spine. I don't know what to do. That's probably when I'm crying the most, when Zutara is doing something.
Crying from pain or crying from happiness?
Both, because I'm slowly sinking Katang and then going back into Zutara. It's a transformation, you know? The sun, the moon, the truth.
Oh, God.
I had to. There's too many Team Wolf people in here.
Yeah, it's very true. So back over on Team Zuko, which is just Zuko and Iroh, he goes and stays with the foxy nurse. And then steals her bird horse after she's been so, so kind to them.
Ugh.
Would you have stolen the bird horse?
Oh, yeah. What? Without a doubt.
Brittany!
You are a horrible human being, Brittany.
They have to walk so much.
You're worse than Azula.
Wow. Okay.
Well,
here's
a little harsh. I'm looking out for Iroh's well-being here.
Yeah, he's kind of elderly. I guess that would take a big toll on his knees and hips and all that.
I would not have stolen the bird horse, but I'm glad that Zuko did. And this is what I mean by that. Because Zuko, I feel like he has a lot of potential to change as a person, but it can't happen all at once. And he already is slowly changing. Just little things here and there about him, like, I don't want to go after the Avatar right now. I'm just tired. Or, you know, him being nice to the foxy nurse. Like, he's slowly seeing...
I love that. That's her name. That's great.
...how bad the Fire Nation is. But he can't change all at once because it won't be as realistic. And it won't mean as much if he just does a 180. So... even though I was kind of mad at him, I was like, okay, he had to steal the bird horse because, you know, he can't learn all his lessons all at once.
Yeah, plus he still has that, like, tunnel vision of he needs to do something and any way possible to do it.
Yeah.
Cue Michael Jackson's Man in the Mirror.
Yes. And obviously talking about the Fire Nation, to Brittany's dismay, Omashu is now under the occupation of the Fire Nation. So...
yes, as soon as I finished watching this episode last night, I took I took my aggression out on the rewatchable group. And I was like, how could you make me stop watching this?
You know what's really funny? I didn't know who you were talking about when you said that. And, like, it's so obvious now because I know how much you love Bumi. But I was like, is she talking about Zuko? I'm confused. So I just,
well, I
like...
I wasn't sure, like, who in the group had watched, so I didn't name names. But yeah. I was so angry.
It's almost like you're a super fan. Angry like that. It's like you're a super fan for the first time, Brittany, on the show because you knew... what other newbies didn't, and you didn't want to spoil them. Now you know our pain.
Yeah, but you just spoil it for everyone, Mitch.
You're terrible.
I'm just,
I mean, we still love you occasionally.
Only when I'm not a lousy avatar and spoiling everything.
It's okay.
So, do you think that this means that Aang will still be able to maybe, like, underground kind of learn from Bumi within Omashu, or do you think that whole thing is bust now?
Well, here's what I hope will happen. He needs to obviously save Bumi, because Bumi is probably, you know, prisoner making some lettuce leaf puns somewhere and annoying the Fire Nation guards any chance that he can get. Oh, Bumi, see, I'm so upset. But I think that I think Aang will save him, hopefully, and then I don't think he's going to be able to learn from him, though. Just a little feeling I get. I feel like he's going to have to find another earthbender. Because the Avatar wants to ruin my hopes and dreams of keeping Bumi around.
Do you hope that if we don't get Bumi to teach Aang that we would return to Bumi every now and
again? Oh, I hope so. I want to see Bumi at least once a season. Twice, if I'm lucky. But I know the story is not about him.
Yeah. Do you agree, Karen? Do you think that this is it now for the plans for Aang to learn from Bumi? Do you think it's going in a different direction?
No. I kind of assume that Bumi is fine. Yeah, making puns and knowing the guards like he's good at. And I think Aang will have to rescue him, and maybe in return, Bumi will teach him some stuff.
Okay. Interesting. Let's move on to favorite scenes. Mitch, what was your favorite scene?
Well, my favorite scene was simply that animation during the Amashu origin story, which we've already sung the praises of.
Yeah. Karen, what was your favorite?
Mine was every single one of Sokka's facial expressions, because they were all brilliant. And also that moment when they were like, why is your forehead red? And he just face palms, and it's because he'd been doing it the entire episode. Yeah. And I was like, oh, that is so perfect.
I loved that. Just that little, oh, so good. Brittany, what was your favorite?
Mine was when Appa finally is free of the tunnel and he just like runs out and like flops on his back. And then Momo comes out a few seconds later and like runs over to him and he's like, ee, 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 and they're like talking about what happened. And I just imagine
Momo complaining
about the hippies. So I related.
Fun fact, I used a gif of Appa falling over like that once before I even watched the series because it was just so appropriate.
10,000% done with this hippie stuff. I'm sure him and Sokka had a good conversation about that, too. It's like Sokka, Momo, and Appa are the only sane people sometimes. Yeah. They're not even all people.
My favorite scene was just secret tunnel. And I did put a period between those two words and made them massive.
Because they are gigantic.
Yes. I appreciate that.
Yeah. I just love the song a lot. But
I liked how they jammed. Like, they were just, like, going at it, you know? And it was, like, the music was just so big and brassy. And I was like, wait, where are they getting all these instruments from? They just, like, pulled them out of the back pockets or something.
Perfect.
It's like when you're in Pokemon, you pull a bike out of your backpack all the time. You're like, yeah, all right, that makes sense.
Yeah, true. So, favorite lines. Mitch, go.
All right. Mine, oh god, I can't even get through it. Mine's when the gang comes back after being attacked midair, and then they're all burnt and kind of just tromping along, and they don't even look at the hippies. And then Sokka just goes, "Secret love cave, let's go."
His Appa's face was so good during.
It's the best.
Karen, what was your favorite line?
I apologize for the construction noises outside my window, because my landlord, that infamous landlord that ruins every podcast I'm on, is outside right now with a giant machine. I don't even know what he's doing, you guys. All right. Anyway.
Is it even warranted? Like, did he warn you? Or is it just
no,
like...
he does whatever he wants to do. And now there's this huge, like, bulldozer thing parked in our driveway. Like, who does this? I hate him so much, you guys. Okay.
Oh, that's funny.
Anyway, mine is when they finally get out of the cave and Aang is all like, "We let love lead the way." And Sokka just goes, "We let you huge, ferocious beasts lead the way." And it's just like, oh, it was good.
Yeah. Oh, I love Sokka. He usually has some of the best lines, like, all the time. Brittany, what was your favorite line?
Mine was when Aang goes up to one of the hippies, Moku, and he's like, "So, are you guys coming to Amashu with us?" And he's like, "Nope." And he's like, "Okay, thanks for everything, Moku."
Oh, yeah. That's what I love about them. They're just so like, whatever.
They're like, "Nope, we're not going to go." He's like, "All right, see you later."
Over it. Been there, done that. Hung out with the Avatar. Learned his secrets, but didn't assassinate him.
Yep. So my favorite line was when, just after Zuko made up the name for himself and Iroh hates the name Mushi. So he goes in retaliation, "Yes, but my nephew was named after his father. So we just call him Junior." And the look on Zuko's face after he says that was just picture perfect. I love it.
He totally reminds me of a grumpy cat.
Yes. Every fandom has a grumpy cat character. Every single one, no exceptions. You all have a grumpy cat in your fandom. What was that, Mitch?
That was like a weird horse laugh.
That was a horse bird laugh.
But that was a horse bird laugh. That's what a horse bird sounds like.
So that's it. We finished our recap and our chat about those two episodes. So again, we'll move into a little bit of listener feedback, but if you do want to leave us any, you can get hold of us via email and drop us a line at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can chat to us on Twitter, and Brittany, you're one of the people on there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can go and chat to Brittany over on Twitter on @re_watchable. You can leave us a comment on this post on hypable.com when the episode goes up. Or you can leave us an iTunes review. And this week, if you rate us 5-star on iTunes, Karen will sing you a Secret Cave love song.
Look, I can't sing, okay? I will give you an extra portion of fire flakes. What are they called? Are they called fire flakes?
Yeah,
okay. Fire flakes. Yes, I got them right. I owe somebody fire flakes. I'm actually going to try making them at some point because they sound really yummy.
You didn't make them yet. I'm really curious.
I know. Well, actually, weren't you the one that sent me, like, an actual recipe for them?
On Tumblr had, like, a whole thing about, like, pictures of, like, it's kind of like Rice Krispie Treats, really, if you ask me, but.
But still.
Like, awesome. Spicy Rice Krispie Treats, and I like spicy stuff, so I wonder how, well, it depends on how much curry powder, I'm sure, you put in them, or chili powder, to make them the appropriate amount of spiciness. You should make them for your meetup in New York City with Brittany and Danya.
Yeah.
New York City Comic Con.
If I had more time, you guys, I would totally do that. Why didn't I think of that before?
Maybe and I'll make the them and I'll bring them to you.
Brittany.
Here's the thing. The rewatchable listeners that inevitably find you guys at New York City Comic Con and make best friends with you are only able to have a share of the fire flakes that you're going to be carrying around all the time.
Wait, how many am I making here?
Well, not many, because here's the stipulation. They have to sing you verbatim the Secret Cave love song.
Ooh.
That's the only way they can get the fire flakes.
Oh, I'm going to be at the Korra panel. Guys, if you're going to be at New York Comic Con and you're going to be at the Legend of Korra panel, if you are like a super fan and you're already way ahead of us, you're already watching The Legend of Korra. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be at that panel. So if you're there, just, I don't know, start screaming, rewatchable, and I'll find you.
Because Danya's very hard to find. She's very tiny.
Wow. Wow. Okay, on that note, we're going straight into listener feedback. Thanks, Karen. So we've got some from Twitter. At Princess Taylor says, "Hey, Rewatchable, at every climactic moment of Avatar, I think of how Ariana is going to spin it in her synopsis and then ruffle." Hashtag classic Ariana. We need to use that hashtag for everything.
Yes. I want my own hashtag.
It's very specific, but I like it.
Classic.
In fact, I'm going to use it right now.
Yeah. yeah, let's see. Oh, cool. On Hypable, we got a comment from Ray, who said, "Hey guys, in regards to Zuko and that continuity point you all were talking about, they do cover it, but very briefly. Aang saves Zuko and they tie up the unconscious prince and bring him back on Appa. Sokka mentions about how it's some quality rope. They land back at the Spirit Oasis and confront Zhao about the Moon Spirit. Sometime during all of this, there is one shot of the broken ropes lying forgotten on the back of Appa's saddle. It's never really talked about, but the general impression is that Zuko regained consciousness, freed himself, and ran off to where we see him again to fight Zhao." I actually missed the bit where the broken ropes were on Appa's saddle.
So. I need a screen cap. I don't believe it.
I saw that.
Oh, really? This is like the opposite. Yeah. You didn't see Azula, but you see the broken ropes? Come on, Karen.
That's where my priorities lie.
Yeah.
Ropes over people.
And then the last comment that we've got is from Susan Lyons, and they said, "I was so scared that Katara was going to beat Zuko when I watched this for the first time. It would be such a cookie-cutter kiddie show thing to do. Then when I saw they didn't, I was so happy. Zuko has been training for years, and Katara has been training only for a short while and formal training even shorter, but it was neat to see how much Katara has learned and grown as she was fighting Zuko. Good point. I actually really like that it wasn't so cut and dry either, so yay. I'm glad that that kind of comes across, and it does, it breaks the mold of the cookie. There's no cookie cutters here. Yeah.
Did they make cookies yet for the show? I know there's one part where they make, like, an Appa-shaped and an Aang-shaped cookie or something. Or perhaps I'm thinking of Korra. I know that there's, like, kind of like a chibi version of them on a cookie. If you know what I'm talking about, Donya.
I can't remember if that was in Atla or Korra.
But you know what happens, right? There's definitely, like, Avatar cookies.
I think there is, but I can't remember if it's Atla or Korra, or if it's in one of the extra bits. But again, we're going to go way off base. So,
I mean, that's what we're
done. We're done. That's it. So, we'll see. Well, some of us will probably see you next week. I know I'm not going to be here, and Karen won't be here because we're going to be gallivanting. Here. Yeah, we're going to be gallivanting around New York. But you'll probably have Mitch, I guess, for what it's worth.
I've been on the like every Avatar episode forever.
Yeah. You get our version of the Avatar. God, sorry, guys. So, thanks for listening, guys. I'm Donya.
I'm Brittany.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Mitch. There you go, Karen.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. Hi guys, welcome to Rewatchable episode 75, and we're going to be covering Avatar The Last Airbender Season 2, Episodes 1, The Avatar State, and 2, The Cave of Two Lovers. What?
Sorry, it's episode 76, somebody didn't change it.
Hey, ciao!
Shame on me!
I trusted you!
Yes, you did. I let you down.
But yeah, so... thanks for listening. I'm Donya. Okay, that's it.
Karen, I love your quotes. They're so specific.
I literally laid it out for you guys, and you still couldn't follow through.
Because you knew I was going to be excited saying it. You put an exclamation point after mine. That's it. No, everyone else had a period, but I had a dime, bitch!
I didn't mess up this time.
Okay? Brittany.
I did. I wasn't on the dock. I was tweeting.
God.
God, Brittany.